welcome to this Wednesday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. We're glad that you are with us. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Coming up in just a bit on Prairie Beat, a North Dakota lawmaker's death in a plane crash leaves the community grieving and raises urgent questions about what comes next. And later, and a bit lighter, it's patio season. Aaron Junkie of Junkyard Brewing joins Prairie Plates to talk craft beer, pizza, and what's ahead this summer. This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and out on the rolling grasslands of eastern North Dakota, 1916 Schoolhouse has certainly been given new life, not just restored, but reimagined. And today, the Nome Schoolhouse is part boutique hotel, part fiber arts retreat, part gathering place for weddings and family reunions, for writers, and for anyone looking to slow down a bit and reconnect. From classrooms to creative space in the newly refurbished barn to finished art upstairs. It's a place rooted in education, history, and rural experience. And joining us today is Lacey Kurtz. She's the event and hotel coordinator at the Nome Schoolhouse to talk about what's coming up at the Nome Schoolhouse this late spring and summer and why people are traveling from near and far to experience it. Lacey, welcome to Main Street. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Craig. Good morning.
Lacey, tell me about the barn that has been recently restored.
Yeah, so we've been working for about the past year completely restoring the barn. It looks amazing. The best part is the animals out there. One of our favorites is our Highland cow named Walter. You check out our social media, tons of pictures and videos with him. But it really brings our goal here, our farm, to fiber. We have a working fiber mill here. So the whole process of the fiber coming in to process through our mill to our products in our store.
You get a chance to visit with people every day from all over the place. What does the reservation process look like from your eyes? What do people call you asking you, hey, can we do X, Y, or Z at the Nome Schoolhouse?
I would say the most common is people wanting to come and just check the place out, whether it be have a meal in our dining room, take a tour, visit the barn, come stay overnight with us. That'd probably be the most common reason people are giving us a call.
When I think of schoolhouse, I don't think of hotel. Tell me what your boutique rooms, if you will, look like.
They're all so special. We have 11. They're not alike. They're all specially curated. We have one suite. It's amazing. It's a large room, windows looking out the front of our property, a nice big king-size bed. But every room has its own theme. Some of them, we have the Nome Wildcat room. That one's really special. That one's kind of more theme of the school. We have Charlotte's Web room, which is another favorite as well. I would say our most popular favorite room is the Sunrise room. It has a beautiful poster bed, and it's the sunrise room. The sun comes right in the window. People love that room. It's room 7. It's a favorite for sure.
You have many, many different types of events at the Nome Schoolhouse, and you get to help coordinate those, if you will. Start with weddings. I have a feeling that it's just a special place to have a wedding ceremony.
It's the most special place, and I actually had my wedding reception here before I ever worked here. So when I say I truly love this place and it's the perfect setting for a wedding, it is. You can have your ceremony inside. You can have it outside in front of the barn. We have plenty of room for you to have your ceremony, reception, groom supper. We have rooms for your guests. If you have your wedding here, you will love it and you will remember it forever and you will not be disappointed. And it will be unique and not like anywhere else that anyone else is having their weddings.
You talked about the dining room too. What are the hours and when is the dining room open and do hours change once summer comes?
As of now, our hours are not planned for any changes, but watch our website and social media for any changes. But right now, in the evenings, if you want to grab supper, we're open Wednesday through Friday from 4 to 8 p.m. We're open on Saturdays from 8 to 2, with 8 to 11 being breakfast and 11 to 2 being lunch. And we post all of our specials for the week on our Facebook page.
You have some upcoming events that are scheduled. Can you walk us through your calendar?
Absolutely. So I'd say the most exciting and recent we have coming up is we are doing some plays. It's going to be two nights. We're going to have a Saturday dinner show and a Sunday dessert show. It's a show called Dancing Lessons, and it's presented by Black Box Theater. We've done a couple dinner theater type events here over the past couple months, and they've been a big hit. So make sure to check out and grab tickets for that. The dinner show is Saturday, May 30th, and the dessert show is Sunday, the 31st.
What else is on the docket?
So another exciting thing, we actually have several dates for this. It's called the Barn to Yarn Experience with Chris Armbrust, who is our owner. And what that is, it's kind of a experience of this whole place. So you get to stay overnight, you get to dine with us, you get to go to the barn, you get to go down into the mill and really see our process from start to finish of the fibers getting made into the products that we have here. And you get to spend one-on-one time with Chris, which is always requested by people. And Chris is just so accommodating and has such an infectious personality. People just love spending time with her. We have several dates. She does that experience once a month. Our soonest one coming up is May 31st through June 2nd.
How do people, if they're interested in coming to the dinner show and to the Barn to Yarn experience, how do they register?
So you can go onto our website and go under our classes tab. You can also go to our Facebook page. We have events set up for all of that, and there are links to the booking sites in both of those places.
What else is upcoming for the Nome Schoolhouse?
So one of our most exciting things we have coming up is this fall, we are going to have a corn maze, and we are going to be doing a grand opening concert. We're going to have people coming out, having the barn open. It's called the Lost Sheep Corn Maze and Pumpkin Patch, and that's going to be this fall. Through the winter, we're busy with a lot of events. Such on the weekends, such as holiday events, corporate retreats. Coming into summer, we're more busy during the week, I'd say, with people, you know, coming out for dining, doing family reunions, weddings, and things like that.
You also host writer's retreats. What are those like?
We do. So that is where a group of people, they kind of just hunker down for the weekend. They have coffee, tea. We have many rooms where people can just kind of break out and have private sessions with one another. And they kind of just put their minds together, spend time together, have meals, and kind of just have the place almost as like their second home for the weekend. I would say just come out, schedule a tour, come grab a meal with us, come check us out. You don't have to have a reservation to come do a self-guided tour. We can do reserve tours as well for groups. We do homeschool groups, friend groups. So just make it a point to come visit us and see what we have here.
That's Lacey Kurtz. She's with the Nome Schoolhouse in Nome, North Dakota, a place where history, creativity, and rural life certainly come together in a truly unique way. And if you're looking for more information about visiting or retreats or upcoming events, you can look at them via social media. Just search for Nome Schoolhouse. Lacey, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Craig. Great talking with you.
Dakota Pro Musica celebrates Mother's Day weekend with the concert series America the Beautiful, featuring folk music, sacred songs, spirituals, and patriotic music to celebrate the 250th of the USA. Concerts will be Saturday, May 9th at 4 p.m. at Dickinson State University, Sunday, May 10th at 4 p.m. at McCabe United Methodist Church in Bismarck, and Monday, May 11th at 7 p.m. in Hazen. More information can be found online at dakotapromusica.org or on their Facebook page.
This is Main Street. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Tragedy struck over the weekend outside of the Twin Cities as a North Dakota lawmaker was among two killed. The story made national headlines and is the focus of this week's regional news podcast, Prairie Beat.
It's just been a really tough week in the North Dakota Democratic MPL family and for the friends and family of Liz outside of politics.
Well, hey there, I'm Eric Dethridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. Welcome back to Prairie Beat.
Prairie Public's weekly news podcast. Danielle, I know that, as usual, lots of things are going on. There was something that happened over the weekend, so just tell us what's on the beat this week.
Yes. So, unfortunately, we did hear some tragic news over the weekend that a North Dakota legislator passed away in a plane crash in Crystal, Minnesota. Liz Conmee represented District 11, which is in Fargo, from the North Dakota Democratic Party. She was a passenger in a small plane that was piloted by her partner, Dr. John Cass. He was a retired Mayo Clinic doctor. And by now, as fast as the news cycle goes, you know, this might seem like old news already, but this story is far from over.
Yeah, there's still a lot left to figure out about this story, such as the investigation into what actually took place that led to this tragic crash. But also, Representative Conmee was running for re-election to her seat in District 11, and the Dem MPL is undoubtedly trying to figure out, what are those next steps?
Correct. So I got on the phone this morning with some party leadership.
I'm State Representative Zach Ista out of District 43 in Grand Forks, and I serve as House Minority Leader.
Representative Ista says the party is, of course, reeling from the tragedy of what happened to their colleague and friend, but they also have a couple of very pressing issues to take care of as soon as possible. Conmee was running, of course, for re-election, so there is the matter of figuring out who will run for that seat. But they also have to find somebody to fill the vacancy to serve the remainder of Conmee's term.
We expect as early as next week, we'll get official notice from the chairman of legislative management, Senator Hoag, that the vacancy has occurred. And then the district has, I believe it's 21 days to fill that vacancy. The Democratic Party will have that opportunity since Liz was a member of the Democratic Party, and that person then will serve for the balance of the 69th Legislative Assembly.
Ista says the rest of the term will mostly consist of a few interim committee meetings and if a special session is called for any reason. So they need someone to fulfill those duties. And Ista said that's the easy part. The other aspect to this will be finding someone to run for that seat that Conmee was running for re-election. She was one of two endorsed candidates running for the state house in that district. And as of today, April 29th, she will be on the June 9th primary ballot. And there really isn't much that can be done about that. He says there are a number of different options being looked at.
Will the local Democratic Party have the ability to put forward a alternative or a replacement for Representative Conmee? Should she advance in the primary? That's possible. Can the local party run a certified writing candidate and attempt to have that person finish in the top two in the primary? Yes, that's an option. There's always an option to collect signatures and run as an independent in the general election that will happen in November. So still doing our best to sort through all of those moving pieces.
So, Danielle, one of the questions I have is, since all those options sound exceptionally difficult and like they require a lot of paperwork and steps, et cetera, could this be addressed to make it any easier? This isn't the first time a candidate has passed away, not only in office, but pretty close to an election by my recollection.
Yes, Representative Ista and I did talk about that for a bit. The North Dakota Republican Party has had some losses in this term as well, with both Representative Josh Christie and Representative Cindy Schreiberbeck passing away. So they've had to fill those vacancies for the remainder of those terms. But with Representative Conmee passing away, as she is running for re-election and so close to the primary, it does remind me of a gentleman named David Ondahl, who passed away while he was running for the state house in 2020 in District 8. He passed away just a few weeks away from that November election. And he could not be replaced on the ballot. And as it would happen, he ended up being elected to that seat. And there was some scuffle around, you know, what was going to happen with that seat in the aftermath. Governor Burgum appointed someone to that seat, but the state GOP disagreed with that. They wanted to pick who was going to sit there. So the Supreme Court eventually had to weigh in on that.
A deceased candidate can win an election. And, you know, the voters' intent may be as a protest against other candidates they disfavored more, or whatever the circumstances that led a voter to cast a ballot for a deceased person. The legislature responded to that. It codified the Supreme Court's analysis. But as we read that statute, it only contemplates general elections, winning a general election.
Ista says he expects the legislature will address that gap in the law to include primary elections as well when they convene again next year.
So did Representative Ista have any thoughts on who they think they might choose to serve out the rest of her term?
Not quite yet. So there are some interesting things to take into consideration with that, because of North Dakota's term limits law. It limits legislative terms to 8 years in either chamber, as well as limiting the governor to 2 terms as well. And ISTA says whoever they choose to serve out the remainder of this term would not have as long of a political career ahead of them because of this law.
Some have suggested that might be a poor design of our term limits or a reason we should consider changing what our term limits provisions are in the Constitution. The reality is whoever sits in that seat for these remaining months of the interim will forego the ability to serve 2 full House terms. They'll really only have a constitutional right to serve 1 4-year term in the House, absent any future changes.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point. And I've heard that the legislature is looking at ways to tweak that language a bit. Right now it's 8 years or 2 terms in each chamber, which could add up to 16 years if the lawmakers switch chambers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now I think they want to amend that to mean they could serve up to 16 years in 1 chamber, right?
That, yes. So that will remain to be seen what they decide to do there. But I do interpret all this to mean that they will choose someone to fill out this term and then someone else will be running for the seat in November. And whatever process they choose to get to that point, be it, the write-in or the signatures, et cetera, that will be hashed out soon, too. So we'll just have to see what happens.
The details of who will fill and run for that seat will undoubtedly work itself out. But while that is going on, no doubt there's a lot of sadness and grief about the loss of Representative Conmee, not just in the halls of the state capitol, but throughout her community, her district, and among her family and friends.
I did read her obituary, which honestly I would recommend reading if you haven't read it. In addition to details about her childhood and schooling and work life that you usually see in obituaries, there was a section of things that she loved, which included birds, Tommy and the rest of her kids, which honestly sounds like an inside joke to me, abs classes at the Y, speeding, LeBron James, and just a bunch of other things that were kind of funny and endearing and really demonstrated just how she was loved by her family and friends. And I asked Representative ISTA this morning, too, if he had anything to share about his colleague and friend, Liz Conmee.
One thing I've really enjoyed hearing amidst this tragedy is how the version of Liz I knew is the same version of Liz everybody knew. She just lived with authenticity, with this generosity of spirit, a joy and zest for life. And that's the memories everyone is sharing of her. So it's wonderful to know that she really was genuinely this warm spirit who took her work seriously, but never herself too seriously, added a lot of joy and humor and kindness to any room she entered.
Well, yeah, it's a good time to remember that this is a citizen legislature, mm-hmm. and made up of real people, not career professional politicians. And so that is a definite loss, not only in the halls of Bismarck, but for Fargo and the community as well. And for the state of North Dakota, we, of course, send our condolences and sympathies out to anyone and everyone feeling the grief of this loss of Representative Conmee. We will keep watching to see how things work out for the residents in District 11 where she served. So, Danielle, were there any other noteworthy stories this week out of the Prairie Public Newsroom?
So know that you are absolute top priority.
Senator John Hoeven says he's working on making sure federal funding for the Farm Service Agency comes through.
I think that we are definitely going to reach 85% North Dakotans in our programs well before 2030.
UND Med School has a goal of having 85% of their student body be North Dakota natives. And I've just been watching the measles numbers in North Dakota. We are approaching the total that we reached last year, which was 36 total cases. As of today, 35 people have tested positive for measles this year.
And I saw there was one additional case in Grand Forks mm-hmm. County that you reported on. Of course, yep. The measles dashboard, you can find that at prairiepublic.org. You do update it and you get a
yes.
kind of visual display on how that is spreading. Definitely a lot going on as usual. Thanks, Danielle.
Absolutely. Be sure to tune in to Prairie Public for more news. Or again, check us out online at news.prairiepublic.org.
All right, that'll do it for us this week on Prairie Beat. I'm Eric Dethridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We'll see you on the beat next week.
You can hear new episodes of Prairie Beat here on Main Street every Wednesday or subscribe to them wherever you get your favorites.
Beef prices at the grocery store are near record highs. The latest data for a pound of ground beef is $6.70 on average. A sirloin steak runs about $14 a pound. As Harvest Public Media's Michael Marks reports, buying a whole or half cow directly from a rancher could make more financial sense.
I'm in Casey Ginnert's tidy garage in Canyon Lake in Central Texas, and she's giving me a tour of her freezer.
Okay, so I like to organize. So at the top, we have mostly, we've got beef flank, we've got any roast I have, we've got the osso buco.
It is packed, mostly with beef. She's got roasts, ribs, steaks, and a whole trove of her favorite cut.
This third row, this is literally nothing but beef tenderloin. Is that not the most beautiful thing you've ever seen?
These will last Ginnert and her partner more than a year, and these are folks who eat beef about 5 nights a week. They ordered the meat in bulk from a ranch about 75 miles east called Bastrop Cattle Company. Buying meat direct from a rancher is not a new concept, but the industry boomed thanks to COVID. Back then, grocery stores couldn't keep their coolers stocked, and customers wanted to know they'd have a stable meat supply. Before the pandemic, Bastrop Cattle Company had been selling their grass-fed beef to restaurants. Here's one of the owners, Max Kremke.
And then 2020 happened, and we were the only ones, one of the few places that was still able to process because we're small. And then we were able to sell to the public, and we had a decent website. And so ever since then, it's kind of just been direct to customer only.
The cattle crowd in the shade about 50 yards away from us, munching and mooing, some of them just a few days old. Kremke says that buying a whole cow from a rancher like him used to be a more complex process.
You'd buy the cow from the rancher live weight, then go to the butcher, and then it would turn into a hanging weight, which is with all the inedible parts removed. Then you pay a processing fee, you pay a kill fee, give cutting instructions.
Now, customers don't have to think about all that. They pick how much beef they want, decide how they want it cut, with Kremke's help, and then pay one fee. It's over $2,000 for a half cow and nearly $4,000 for a whole. That's a lot of money. But with retail beef prices still near record highs, it might end up cheaper than the grocery store, which is even a surprise to Kremke.
I remember the exact moment whenever somebody said to me, oh, we did the numbers, and actually we think it'll save us money. And I was like, oh, okay, that's wild.
Smaller operations like Kremke's pay more than big meat packers to process, package, and ship their food, which gets passed on to the customer. But as beef prices go up in stores, buying in bulk from a rancher becomes a better deal.
I think that you probably were paying a premium to be purchasing the more local products in bulk. My hypothesis is that that gap has shrunk a little bit.
That's Erin Beyer, extension meat specialist for Kansas State University. She says there are caveats. You have to have enough money to pay for the beef up front and a freezer to store it all. Beyer says some people who bought a whole cow during the pandemic got more than they bargained for.
That was a big issue from the beginning of, oh, I bought a half of beef or a quarter of beef, and then they would get it, right? And they have one small chest freezer. There's no way that's going to fit.
Back in Canyon Lake, Casey Ginnert likes how buying a few hundred pounds of beef at a time shields her from fluctuations in price.
Once you buy it at that price, if it goes up because something's going on, political science-wise, whatever, my pricing has stayed the same, at least for a good year, year and a half.
Ginnert has not penciled out exactly how much money she's saving, but after buying 3 orders from Bastrop Cattle Company, she's convinced it's the way to go.
The upfront cost is a little painful, but it is worth it in the long run. And just think that you're not going to see beef probably for a good year to year and a half on your grocery bill, and that makes a huge difference.
She says this is how she'll buy beef from now on. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Michael Marks.
Still to come on Main Street, warmer weather means patio season, and few spots do it better than Junkyard Brewing Company. That's still ahead on Main Street right after this news.
Plains Art Museum in Fargo hosts its Spring Gala 2026 Nightmare at the Museum, Saturday, May 2nd from 7 p.m. to midnight. The event includes food, wine tasting, an art auction, and music by DJ Ower. More information at plainsart.org.
Welcome to another edition of Prairie Plates Served Weekly here on Main Street. I'm Rick Eon, and we're sitting here in the Prairie Public Studios / Foodios with a special guest, Aaron Junkie, owner of Junkyard Brewing Company, West Fargo and Moorhead, Minnesota locations. They make some of the best beer in the region, in my opinion, and I also think that they have some of the best patios in the area. They're just a lot of fun. Aaron Junkie, welcome to Prairie Plates.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
I was recently at both locations, West Fargo and in Moorhead on First Avenue, shooting some photos for this segment, but I also got to try an Uncle Chuck's Czech beer at the Moorhead location. It's a lot of C's to say, C's.
Yeah, Uncle Chuck's Czech. You have too many of those, and it'll be harder and harder to say it.
That's right. I just had one, but I did really enjoy it, and I ran into some music enthusiasts over at the Moorhead location. That's one of the bright spots about hanging out at breweries, I think, is you really run into some fun and unique people, interesting conversations, those sorts of things. So I just always really enjoy visiting your locations, especially the Moorhead location.
Yeah, we had that tap room open for over 10 years, and it's kind of become, it has a feeling like a Cheers bar. Like a lot of people like to make that comparison to the bar they like when they have that atmosphere of just feeling like everybody knows each other. But that is really how it feels in Moorhead to me, for sure. And then I think to a lot of people that come in there, you can come in there by yourself randomly on a whim and probably run into some people that you know. I've seen that thousands of times over the years. People just wandering in by themselves. They get a random whim. I've got some time to kill and I want to go have a beer. They'll pop in by themselves and then they'll find themselves talking to one of our bartenders that they know or another regular they know or a friend that they haven't seen in a long time. I see it all the time.
Well, and maybe have a pizza or unique pizza. We can talk about those later on.
Or start getting into the popcorn.
Yes, popcorn's definitely on the list to talk about because it's some of the best in the area too. But before all of that, Aaron Junkie, tell us a little bit about yourself or how you got into the brewing industry.
It all started with home brewing while I was in college. I started playing with rugby with a group of guys who were playing in a non-college affiliated, just a hobby club. And for one of our get-togethers, we had a rugby watching party, and the older guys on the team said, "Hey, you younger guys, everybody needs to bring a 40 of some kind of beer to this party, and we'll pick it up for you if you need us to." So I didn't want to be a loser and pick some kind of loser beer style. So I went with Guinness. Was my request because it was a rugby club.
No loser beer here.
No, I was like I didn't know anything about beer. I didn't know I knew very little about beer at the time, but I knew that Guinness would probably be looked upon as like a legit choice for a rugby party. So that's what I went with. They got it for me. Someone handed it to me at the party, and I wasn't a high school partier or drinker or anything like that. Generally well behaved in high school. So that was one of my first experiences drinking a whole bottle of beer in college with those guys. And from the first sip, I just loved the flavor. And most people will find that kind of startling to start with a Guinness Extra Stout and love it from the get-go, but I really did. And that got me thinking, how do I get this more regularly on a college budget? And that's what led me to pursue home brewing, because I figured I could get the ingredients for a lot less than the cost of the finished beer. So I did some research on the internet, and that was not very good information, but it was enough to get me started. After that, years went by, and I found that books were a much better source of information, having been written by someone who was vetted by a publisher and knew what they were talking about.
Research helps. Well, yep. And now it's evolved into a very successful brewing company with two successful locations. Tell us about Junkyard Brewing Company for listeners outside of the Fargo area.
So to finish the story of it starting, I tried to get some investors to start a brewery. This is like around 2010 or so, and nobody would really nobody was really was willing to invest any significant amount of money. So my brother Dan and I just pooled our savings and started it in a little hole in the wall spot with some homemade equipment. And then it just started growing from there. We were able to open a taproom location about a year after starting to brew beer commercially. And within a year of that, we were able to start paying ourselves to do it. So that was a major cause for celebration for Dan and I. And we started out brewing the most experimental beers that we thought people would be willing to try at that time. So we were starting with we started with a cream ale and a Baltic porter, which were not very crazy by today's standards, but at that time nobody was really making those styles, so we thought that would be different and interesting for people. It wasn't too much longer before we started experimenting with a little bit crazier flavors, like a peanut butter stout, peanut butter bandit, that came to be one of our most notorious beers.
That beer is delicious.
Thank you. And then we got into fruited sours, other ingredients like coconut, all kinds of stuff. Started experimenting with different styles of IPA, black IPA, red IPA, milkshake IPAs. And then along came the powerhouse hazy IPA style. That's one of our specialties today and one of our top-selling styles.
Well, a lot of beers to choose from here. We have a menu in front of us, too, and everything from lighter beers, pilsners, to stouts, to sours, and some other choices as well.
Yeah, we try to keep a little bit of everything on tap, something for the connoisseurs, the beer nerds, and then also something for their friend who drinks Busch Light or Bud Light or whatever. I've served plenty of those people that come in and they treat it like a challenge to us that we're not going to be able to find something they like, but we usually have a really tasty, clean lager or light ale on tap that they find themselves really getting into.
That's kind of how I run this radio segment, is it's kind of something for everyone, from the food enthusiasts, people just starting out, or, you know, somebody just starting out drinking beer, wine, that sort of thing. And I think it's just a good thing to have all levels you offer.
Yeah, we're here to serve the community and mm-hmm. and all aspects of it. Yeah. So we're here to serve all tastes as much as we can.
Well, and you've recently opened a location in West Fargo. How long has that been open now? Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's a separate business. My wife runs that. That opened in the fall of 2023. And I know you should get her in here if you want to talk more in depth about that. She's there every day. I'm in the office in Moorhead every weekday. That's my home base. But I know quite a bit about it. I can speak to some of it.
Well, I do want to say thank you, because Prairie Public did have some Hamilton trivia there not too long ago. So mm-hmm. say thank you to
I will tell her for thanks us. From you. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we should talk about the patios there, and not only there, but the Moorhead location. Then we can get more in depth with the beer, but because it's beginning to be patio season.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Well, a favorite time of year for North Dakotans and Minnesotans. Traveling around to other parts of the country, San Diego is probably the most notorious for always having perfect weather. And when I've been there, I just don't see the same enthusiasm for patio spaces. You see them because in a place like that, you have to have them, but you just don't see people appreciating them, I feel like, the same way we do around here, where we have a limited season to get out and enjoy them. So when patio season hits, it really blows up. It kind of happened a little bit by accident for us in Moorhead, as we because the building we opened in had kind of a concrete space out front of some overhead doors, and it was always our plan to replace the old overhead doors that would have been for semis and delivery trucks, replace them with nicer doors so that we could open them up in the summertime. We thought that would be a cool vibe. We just didn't realize how much of the patio space would take off and how popular that would be in the summer times. So it became kind of a build it and they will come thing. Like every time we built a new picnic table, the next night it was full of people. So we just kept building picnic tables until we ran out of space over there.
I see a lot of dogs, and are you dog friendly too?
The dogs are welcome. I mean, service animals are always welcome. But dogs and pets are only welcome on the patio in the summertime. I mean, you could bring them out in the wintertime if you got a husky or something. He might be comfortable out there. But yeah, we do that. We don't have pets in the tap room for, you know, primarily just hygiene reasons and allergies and space constraints and things like that. You may be a dog mom or dad or cat mom or whatever, but I mean, we're most concerned with being friendly toward the actual human children. That can be a challenge at times, just like with parents can be. There are some parents out there that just don't watch their pets and their children as well as we would hope. And so that presents a challenge at times, trying to make the space feel comfortable and welcoming to everybody, while trying to rein in some guests that may have kids or pets that are getting a little unruly or disruptive. So,
but good dogs on the patio are
welcome. Yep. Good. Anybody good, any good animal, any good person is welcome at Junkyard Brewing Company. Yep.
We're chatting with Aaron Junkie, owner of Junkyard Brewing Company, today with locations in Moorhead, Minnesota and West Fargo. Aaron, let's maybe talk a little bit more about beer. We hit the patio because it's just getting to be that time of season, and it's just a lot of fun hanging out on your patios. So let's talk about beer a little bit more about beer anyway.
Yeah, and we can even talk about beers on the patio, too, and combine two of our favorite things here. Yeah, we're constantly rotating our beer selection. Our menu changes weekly as new beers are produced. We have well over 600 different recipes that we've brewed over the years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah. Many of them never come back again, and everybody has their favorite. It seems like every other person I talk to has it's a different favorite beer for them, and they're getting after me about why we haven't made it in 3 years. And it's just because everybody has a different favorite. And our favorite thing to do is to keep experimenting and challenging ourselves and keep making different things. You know, just because I tell people, you know, hey, we don't have your favorite right now, but, you know, I'm glad you're here. Maybe you'll find something that we make now or in the future that becomes your new favorite. And I know that happens many, many times.
I'm sure they will. Is there a beer or are there a few beers that you're really proud of?
I am super proud of our hazy IPA selection. That's one of our specialties right now. And like I said, one of our top sellers. I'm also really proud of what we've been doing with our lagers. We've been doing a lot of really good pilsners that have been selling really well as well. We have a new lager coming out soon, hopefully in time for Cinco de Mayo. It's a Mexican-style lager that we had collaborated with Cross Strain Brewing out of Nebraska. They came up and they brewed with us. And the idea was to go back to the really traditional style of Mexican lager when German brewmasters were kind of starting the beer brewing industry in Mexico. And they were trying to recreate what is called a Vienna-style lager from back home in Europe. And they were using imported Vienna malts, imported hops, and lager yeast. But they were using rice at that time because it helped to make their ingredient list a little bit cheaper, helped to reduce the cost for them. And that also lightened the beer up, making it a little lighter than what a true European Vienna lager would be. And that was the start of what is now the Mexican lager style. And you can still get beers that would be a little more akin to an old-fashioned Mexican lager. I think the Corona Familiar in the brown bottle with the more tan label is a little bit more robust version of the Corona that we're all familiar with. And I think a couple of other the major brands have a little more of a throwback version that's going to be a little more malty and have a little more hop character.
I really enjoyed that peanut butter beer. That was a really good one.
We've done a number of beers with peanuts in them over the years, and they're all people have a thing for peanut butter, except for people with an allergy, of course.
Yeah, don't drink it if you have an allergy.
Yeah, yeah.
What is a really unique beer that you have now that you'd like to highlight?
Right now, looking at our menu, I see our Cabin Season, and that's an amber ale with maple, a little bit of real maple syrup, and some pecans, as they call them down in Georgia. It's a maple pecan amber ale, and I think that one's really cool because it is a style of beer that people would not have been very excited about. And if we go back like 5 years, 6 years at that time, people would not have been too excited about this beer. You would have had to go back about 15 years to get to a point when people would have been excited about this style. And so I think that beer just kind of highlights how the beer industry is cyclical and trends come and go and styles come and go. And this is a much more subtle style of beer than people have been really excited about in the last 10 years or so. It's been all about the most crazy flavors, the craziest beers, high alcohol, high bitterness, super hot, super amounts of hops. And this beer is just a subtle malty amber ale with little hints of natural vanilla and pecan in there. And it's just very tasty and well balanced.
That sounds like a good beer to try in the springtime. And I myself like well-done beers that taste like beers.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of other people like fruited beers, sours, fruited sours, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And that's all great. But my preference would be something like that. Are there any other beers on your menu here that you think would be good for springtime consumption?
Well, when that Mexican lager comes out, that's going to be delicious. We're simply calling that one Cerveza.
Love it. You have interesting names for a lot of things.
Yeah, sometimes we do. I could tell you some stories about mispronunciations of beers that would be inappropriate for the radio. But yeah, we have a lot of fun names. I just keep a list in the notepad on my phone whenever somebody says something or I hear something or read something that I think that could be a fun beer name. I'll just jot it down. And when we have a new beer coming out, I'll read through that list and just kind of get a feel for what I think is going to fit with the new beer we're trying to make. Also think it's cool on our menu. We've got one of the beers, Uncle Chuck's Check, that you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. That's actually named for my Uncle Chuck. He loved fishing and ran a resort near Bemidji. So I thought it would be cool to name this real traditional, like old-fashioned Pilsner style after him, and then put some old fish paintings as can art.
That's very fitting and a really neat honorary thing to do.
Yeah, it's very cool to be able to do that. Some family members think it's very cool as well. They also think it's cool for obvious reasons. And another one of those we've done is Grandpa Bill's Pills, and that one's named after my Grandpa Bill. So now I've got family members breathing down my neck to name beers after him. So,
well, your wife's next on the list probably.
Yeah, she might be. We've done a couple named for people who work at the brewery too. We did one recently called Casey the Younger. We've got a guy named Casey Young who's one of our brewers, and then we did another follow-up to that called Dustin the Elder, both West Coast-style IPAs. And now those guys said that our brewmaster, Corey, we got to do one for him called Caesar Corey, the Dictator.
Wow.
So they like to razz each other back there.
Well, speaking of interesting and unique names, you also offer some pizzas. And I see on the list here, Macho Man Pizza, Tarantino, and Lord of the Wings.
Yeah. I couldn't resist but have fun with the pizza names, too. So they've been very popular.
Well, and the popcorn is also quite good. I enjoy the popcorn. And I know it's just simple, but good bar popcorn is hard to find. It's either too salty or stale. There are a few places like Dempsey's I really enjoy it, but
yeah,
you guys hit it.
Well, I think I've come to realize recently one part of why places may not have the best popcorn is that some places are bagging it and rewarming it the next day if they have leftovers at the end of the night.
Ah.
Yeah, so that's obviously not going to taste as fresh as fresh popped popcorn. We recently, one of our bartenders, shout out to Dakota, she worked out an arrangement to donate our popcorn to local shelter. So she gathers up all the leftover popcorn. Our servers bag it at the end of the night when we have leftover popcorn. They gather it up, and she takes it and donates it. I guess it's an appreciated snack for folks. So it's nice that we don't have to toss it away.
That's really a special thing to do.
Yeah, it's cool. Props to her for arranging that.
And I just love the smell of fresh popcorn coming into an establishment and you're just kind of like, ah.
Yeah, it's something cooking, you know. I like to smell, I think Julia Child said that, I like to smell something cooking.
Well, and on Julia Child, Aaron Junkie with Junkyard Brewing Company, it's been a pleasure having you in. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rick.
This has been another edition of Prairie Plates here on Main Street. I'm Rick Eon. We'll talk to you next week.
If you're listening to the 3 p.m. broadcast of Main Street, stay tuned. All Things Considered is next. Nickel is a key ingredient in stainless steel and many modern batteries, but in Indonesia, a global hub for nickel production, mining is taking a serious toll on the environment and public health. Here on the ground reporting from Indonesia's nickel boom, coming up on All Things Considered, beginning at 4 p.m. Central, 3 o'clock Mountain. And at 8 p.m. tonight, listen for Travel with Rick Steves. Find your way around the neighborhoods of Rome by sampling their favorite street foods. Get into the rhythm of everyday life in Portugal and learn the nicknames for the skyscrapers of London. It's all on Travel with Rick Steves tonight at 8 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Mountain, after the evening edition of Main Street on Prairie Public. And in baseball last night, the Twins fell to Seattle 7-1. They continued that series today with an afternoon game.
This is Decoder Datebook for April 29th. On this date, in 1990, the Fargo Forum profiled the pastor of Bethel Evangelical Free Church in Fargo, not for his ministry, but for his earlier work as a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter. The Reverend Robert Page grew up in Ashtabula, Ohio, and graduated from Kent State University with a journalism degree in 1968. He joined the Akron Beacon Journal as a reporter and assistant state editor at a volatile moment in American history, with the Vietnam War, political assassinations, and widespread unrest dividing the country. By spring of 1970, tensions had reached a breaking point. President Nixon announced plans to invade Cambodia and end draft deferments for undergraduates. Campuses erupted. At Kent State, protests began peacefully on May 1st, but by nightfall, violence flared. Police flooded the streets, and the Ohio National Guard was deployed. Over the weekend, the campus ROTC building burned. On May 4th, about 2,000 students gathered for a peaceful protest. Guardsmen moved in with tear gas, then advanced, pushing the crowd across campus. In the chaos, soldiers opened fire. 4 students were killed, and 9 were wounded. Page and a colleague were alone in the newsroom when the shooting began. He drove immediately to the hospital, slipped past guards at a lockdown emergency entrance, and found the victims laid out beneath white sheets. Later, he and another reporter obtained the names of the dead and injured by distracting a congressman while glancing at his casualty list. Page relayed the names to the newsroom. A year later, Page and the Akron Beacon Journal staff won the Pulitzer Prize for local reporting. Afterward, he grew disillusioned with journalism, feeling he was failing God. In 1973, he entered seminary. Page came to Fargo in 1983 to lead Bethel Church, which grew significantly under his guidance. He left in 1991, having shaped the community he served. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Trista Razor Sturza. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by LiveWire, a provider of live event audio, video, lighting, staging, and streaming services for events, conferences, and meetings across the Prairie region and around the country. More information at livewirenow.com.
And that's it for this Wednesday's Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us. Tomorrow on the show, missing disclosures raise transparency questions in North Dakota as six North Dakota legislators have failed to file required financial disclosure forms. Plus, in Tech with Peck, what makes great audio sound great? Everything from room-filling speakers to high-end earphones and earbuds we'll have with our tech expert, George Peck. And that's tomorrow here on Main Street, and we look forward to your joining us again.